Welcome to Comic Talk Today for Wednesday, June 13th, 2018. It is New Comic Book Day. Why are you listening to this podcast? Go read some comics! This episode is going to be a little different. I'm going to be splitting it into two parts. The first will be a rant. I saw a little article that I read a couple days ago, and I thought it was interesting. I wanted to talk about it because it's something that I've been wanting to talk about on this podcast for a couple weeks, and I think it gave me the right lead-in into the discussion that I wanted to have. Right after that, we're going to have some listener questions, so thank you all for sending those questions in. It's very much appreciated. I got some really good ones. And I hope this episode doesn't go very long as a result of the amount of stuff that I want to talk about in this one. But first up, let's get to the rant. And this week's rant is about Hollywood. Yes, Hollywood, that place that makes movies that sometimes we love and sometimes we hate. But we are guaranteed to always have some trolls talking about on Twitter. And I saw this one over on CBR. And it was an article where they paraphrased kind of a talk that the 20th Century Fox chairman and CEO, Stacy Snyder, talked about at a conference in Barcelona recently. And she warned other studios that they shouldn't rely on superhero material, on branded material, in order to entice moviegoers to go see their movies. She said it's important for people, for studios to branch out and do other things. Here was a quote that I found interesting. When you think about the greatest showmen, what we had to hang on to was the music was incredible, and that. If there was ever a person to be the greatest showman at Christmas time, it was Hugh Jackman. The same with The Martian. It was based on a book that was self-published. It was hardly a bestseller. If we don't continue to reach out to the folks that come more than just to see the Avengers, we're going to have just a weekend business. And I thought that was an interesting thing to say. I'm not sure I entirely agree. In fact, I don't entirely agree. I think she's completely wrong in that. So what I did was I went and I looked up the top 100 highest grossing films of all time worldwide. Now, these are not adjusted for inflation. So, for example, Avengers Infinity War on this list is not at number one because it only lists the actual dollar amount, not the adjusted for inflation amount. If we adjusted for inflation, I believe that is the number one. Based on this list that I found, it is number four. I'm going to give you a list of movies that I found on this list. Now, granted, I only looked at the top 100. Okay, this comes from Box Office Mojo. They have a ranking for the top 738 movies. That's kind of a weird number, but they update it all the time. This is a great resource if you want to check out what movies are doing worldwide. I'm going to give you a little tidbit, first of all. Out of the top 100 highest-grossing movies worldwide of all time, 22 of those movies are superhero movies. Think about that for a second. Six of those are Star Wars movies. Three are Fast and the Furious, six Harry Potter, and 25 animated movies. I want to run through this list of top 22 superhero movies. At number 4, Avengers Infinity War. At number 6, The Original Avengers. Number 8, Age of Ultron. Number 9, Black Panther. Number 15, Iron Man 3. I know some people are groaning because you hate that movie, but it was a great movie. Civil War, Captain America Civil War, number 17. Dark Knight Rises at 22. The Dark Knight at 34. Spider-Man 3 at 50. Spider-Man Homecoming at 53. Batman v Superman, the greatest film of all time, at number 57. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 at 61, Thor Ragnarok at 63, Wonder Woman at 68, the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire at 69, Spider-Man 2 at 79, Deadpool number 1 at 80, Guardians of the Galaxy 1 at 82, Amazing Spider-Man at 86, Days of Future Past at 89, Suicide Squad at 91, and Captain America Winter Soldier at number 97. Now, those are some pretty interesting numbers because we're looking at only 100 movies right now. Now, when we go down the list, those numbers might change quite a bit, but all I looked at was the top 100. 22, so almost a quarter of those movies, are superhero movies. If we take at some of these other ones that I mentioned, it's over half of all the top grossing movies of all time are not original material. They're all franchise material, which is something that the CEO of Fox is warning against studios doing. Which doesn't really make sense to me. If over half of your movies, of the top grossing movies, are these franchise materials that you're sourcing out, branded material as she calls it, why would you want to quit doing that? I looked at the two movies that she mentioned, The Greatest Showman, which I haven't seen. My 14-year-old daughter watched it and she loved it. That did $432 million. And then The Martian, which was a pretty good movie and even better book, did $630 million. Now, on the top 100, the lowest grossing movie there is, let's see, number 100, I think, was $709 million. That's the Twilight Saga New Moon. Thumbs down from me, but $709 million. The number one spot at $2.78 billion, which was Avatar number one. I guess they're still making Avatar 2 and 3, right? I know they've been talking about it for years. Anyways, pretty big variance between number 1 and number 100. But, you know, the movies that she mentions as the types of movies that she would like to see Hollywood pursue aren't necessarily high-grossing movies. I mean, they make a good bit of money. And I'm sure based on the production cost versus the box office gross, maybe the ratio there does make a lot more sense for the studios. But it seems to me like the cash cows are really the stuff that we like, the stuff that nerds like, the superhero films at a quarter of the top 100 movies. And then, of course, another quarter of those movies are animated films, which makes total sense. Now, I included from different studios, right? So Disney and Disney-owned properties and Universal and Universal-owned properties. Those are most of these on the top 100. And they include movies like, you know, Beauty and the Beast, Minions, Toy Story, The Incredibles, things like that. Stuff that makes sense. Stuff that's very popular. Now, of course, kids love seeing movies, so it makes sense. And the good thing about superhero movies is that parents love to see those, and the kids love to see those. So it makes perfect sense that they would be higher up on the charts than some of these other ones. But looking at half of these, they really are, more than half, this branded material. I was trying to go over some of the original stuff that would be on this list. And I mean, there's very few. Now, granted, the top two are definitely original material, right? So Avatar and Titanic. Maybe you could put Jurassic World in there, the Jurassic Park series. There's like three or four of those movies on this list. But other than that, not many of these are really original ideas. Skyfall, maybe? You can't really count Transformers. I didn't count Transformers on this list, but I mean, technically, we could consider those comic book movies, I guess, in some way. The Pirates of the Caribbean stuff, that's original material. There's three or four movies of that on there. But overall, I don't see it, and I'm not understanding why it is that Hollywood wants to cannibalize its own sales. And I don't watch the Oscars anymore. I used to. You know, growing up, my parents loved watching the Oscars and Grammys and Emmys and all those shows. I don't watch them anymore because it seems like the movies that oftentimes get the largest number of awards are movies that people don't really see. Because the way that these movies are voted on is by the Academy, so people in the industry. And of course, people in the industry want to see more artsy stuff. I'm trying to think what the one, Hollywoodland, I think it was called, that won a ton of awards. The box office on it was not great. The people that watched it loved it. But the demographic for that particular movie was not extremely varied. It definitely was one of those movies, I think, that was made for Hollywood types to vote on it to win an Oscar. And I think that's fine. You know, this is not something that's explicitly exclusive to the Hollywood movie making industry. This happens everywhere. Comics, TV, movies, books. There's always books that, for example, people really love that are critically acclaimed, but nobody buys. So I think of books like The Vision, right, by Tom King, who was critically acclaimed by tons of people, and really nobody bought it. A lot of the buzz that we saw was because comic reviewers loved it, comic book artists and writers really loved it, but who was really buying that book? Not a whole lot of people. And granted, this was before Tom King became a big breakout star in Batman, but even then, if you go back and see sales of Vision on the trade paperback, it's still not a high number. I think it's picked up quite a bit, of course, but still not the highest number. When that book was coming out, nobody was really buying it. We see this all around, right? A lot of the times when we see the Harveys, there's books on there that nobody ever heard of. They're very small indie press stuff, and they get a lot of praise by the industry. And I think that's kind of the problem that I'm seeing with the quotes by Snyder on this particular presentation she gave in Barcelona for the movie industry. Now, of course, it's a movie industry conference, and so she's going to kind of tailor her message towards the movie industry audience. I'm not sure if she was giving this kind of talk to an open audience at something like, let's say, like an E3. I just thought of that because E3 is going on right now, the giant video game industry. The message is always much different when we have those kind of things, right? So if you go to like San Diego Comic-Con, the messaging for these comic book movies is very different than what we would see in maybe like the Hollywood Reporter or Variety, and, you know, stuff that kind of relates more to the industry press than it does to the average Joe. And I often have this kind of thing where I think about it. I'm big into technology, as I've said many, many times. And I always do like crazy weird things. And I was listening to a show yesterday about like who puts custom ROMs on Android phones and things like that. And I mean, I've been doing that for years because I don't like just the stock stuff. But for most people, like, who really does that? You know, you just buy a phone and you use the phone and that's it. It's the same kind of thing here. So I don't know if I agree with it. Do you think that Hollywood should maybe try to branch out into other stuff, try to do more varied type stories, more original type stories? It seems to me like what's working right now is the superhero stuff. And maybe the way forward is, sure, to branch out of simply superhero stories, but bring in more comic stuff. And I think we do see this, right? So like Image and Skybound and those comic companies, they option a lot of their comic books. And that's why people like going to those publishers, because they get the movie option. And, you know, it's nice to have a little extra change in your pocket as a comic creator, because the comics maybe aren't selling as much. Maybe it's hard to support yourself on just being a creator on a comic book budget. And I understand that. But some of those stories that are getting optioned are very different, right? They're not just typical Capes and Cows type stories. And the majority of these movies on the list that I mentioned, I think all of them really, are the typical Capes and Cows stuff. I mean, Spider-Man, X-Men, Suicide Squad, Captain America, Avengers, Iron Man, Batman. Of course they're going to be high-grossing stuff. Those are also some of the top-selling comic book titles, so it makes sense that they would translate well into film because they're in the zeitgeist of people. It's stuff that people are aware of and they want to see more of. But, for example, when, like, we just talked about the Bloodshot movie a couple weeks ago. When that comes out, will it do well? It's kind of a Capes and Cows. I'm not sure how well it'll do. I'm sure it'll do fine as an action flick, but, you know, we'll see. There's other comic book properties that don't do as well. I mean, I think about, like, Wanted, the Mark Miller book, or Red. What are some other ones? The Assignment movie that came out. Like, those didn't do very well. They had a following. It did okay in the box office, but they weren't top-grossing movies. So it seems to me like the best option is, yes, maybe branch out of just doing Capes and Cows stories, but bring in some of these really interesting comic book stories, really interesting comic creators that have things to say, that are willing to do interesting things with the comic book format that will translate well into film. Because that's a way for them to do more varied stuff and not just the superhero stuff. That's important. Yeah, I thought about comic book or comic book movie fatigue quite a bit. I know there was a little humding in there where people were kind of maybe talking about being bored with comic book movies, and then like Black Panther came out and Infinity War came out, and the viewpoints on that stuff changed. So I don't think that comic book movie fatigue is a thing. I think what's a thing is bad movie fatigue. Let me rephrase that. Maybe not bad movie. I think every movie has some kind of redeeming quality. Well, most of them have some kind of redeeming quality. And each movie definitely has an audience that it tries to attract. But sometimes those stories don't work quite as well as others, and maybe sometimes when the studios and the writers feel like they have a formula for success and they try to imitate that formula, that's when you start having some kind of fatigue, when you start seeing the same kind of thing over and over. But I think Marvel is learning that lesson, for example, and I'm using them because it's obviously the most successful franchise of movies right now over the last 10 years. And I mean, going through this list, the majority of the superhero flicks on this list are definitely Marvel movies. Marvel is definitely trying, while sticking to a formula, trying to tell different kinds of stories, right? So you have like the heist story, you have like a crime thriller, you have the supernatural stuff, you have the retelling of The Lion King. You figure out which one that is, I can tell you, but I won't. And I think it's interesting, you know, they do have a formula, but they also need to understand people don't want to see the same stuff all the time. It might work for maybe a movie and a sequel, but when you start doing your whole universe that way, it doesn't quite work out. So I understand what Snyder is saying in this. I don't necessarily agree. I think the types of movies that maybe she wants to do are not the type of movies that are popular in the audience. And I understand that. For her, her idea is if you want to go past the weekend business, you need to branch out. But the weekend business is what's giving them the push that they need. I mean, some of these movies, most of these, I think, the superhero ones for sure, are, you know, 10, 15 years old tops. If I go through the majority of the top 100 list, I would say at least half of those movies are from the last 10 to 15 years as well. So people are hungry to see these kind of things. It's not like you should quit doing them, but maybe you can find different stories that kind of branch out your demographics. And I think obviously Black Panther is a great example of that, because I think everyone and their mom saw Black Panther, and of course Infinity War, but everybody was talking about it. People that don't go see superhero movies went and enjoyed it. But then, you know, there's something for everybody. Like, my wife hates superhero movies, but she loves going to see the Deadpool movies. I'm sure some of that is the Ryan Reynolds stuff, but she enjoys the humor. She likes the kind of over-the-top stuff, and they're just really fun action films. Anyways, let me know what you think about all that. You can, of course, find me on Twitter, at Geekvine. That's going to be the best place to reach out at me. I want to have a conversation about this. Do you think that Hollywood should maybe do less superhero cape and cowl type stuff? What kind of movies do you like to go see? Let me know. Let's jump from there to some questions, and I have a few. So thanks to all of you that submitted questions. Paul, Monica, Mike C, and Mike M. I'll start with Paul, who was my ex-co-host on the Battling Essential podcast. You can check him out, of course, on Comics in Black and White. He wants to know, who would win in a fight between RoboCop and Terminator? I think Paul's reading some of that stuff. He got it in a Comixology sale. So, who would win in RoboCop Terminator? I'm trying to think. If we go by the comic books, oh man, that's tough. That is tough. Let's go with the movies. That might be easier. If we go with the movies, I'm going to go with Terminator, the original Terminator, right? The T-800, the first Arnold Schwarzenegger one. There's been, of course, several other Terminators in the flicks. There was the T-1000 and T-2. They had some other ones that popped up later on in movies that we shall not name, because they were not as great. Terminator 3 had the John Connor. It was the T-1000 plus, right? He had like the liquid metal body, but he didn't have kind of the weaknesses. I don't know. That was a whole weird thing. They're supposed to be rebooting the Terminator franchise, so I hope they fix some of that stuff. I'm going to go with Terminator, Paul. I really like the Terminator. In terms of the comics, I think I like RoboCop a little bit better. So for comic battle, maybe I would pick RoboCop. But again, it depends on what Terminator model we're talking about. So be more clear on your question next time. Is Conan awesome? Yes, Conan is awesome. In particular, the Busiek and Kerry Nord stuff. I know this became a thing on Twitter because Kurt Busiek ended up chiming in. And I know Aaron Bell from the Absolute DC podcast was very thrilled to have a crazy conversation with Kurt Busiek about Busiek books that he hates having done and that you should never read. But yes, old Conan, I think, in particular, is awesome. There's new Conan books all the time. I think Dynamite does Conan right now. I'm pretty sure that's the case. And those are pretty good, but I don't think they're quite as good and intense as the stuff from the 80s and 90s. I think if you want to read Conan, definitely check those out. So Conan is awesome. How many pancakes would it take to humanize Judge Dredd? Well, it depends. If Judge Dredd is going to the International House of Pancakes, now relabeled the International House of Burgers, then it would take a whole lot of pancakes because they don't make them anymore, apparently. If he goes to, let's see, the Waffle House, then all it takes is 5. I hope that answers your question, Paul. Monica wants to know, does it bother you when an artist copies their art in a comic, like cutting and pasting from one panel to another? That's an interesting question, and this is something that I've thought about long and hard over the years, because I've seen this happen in many comics. I know it bothers some people more than others. To me, it doesn't bother me as much. Now, if there is a purpose for the cutting and pasting, then I'm totally okay with it. So, for example, there might be a sequence in a particular page where maybe like a silent sequence where you're kind of getting a lot of story information, some emotional content from the characters themselves. I don't think that's a problem. If it's between issues, it might bother me a little bit more, but within the same issue, I don't think it really matters. In particular, if it relates to conveying some kind of emotional content within the storyline. What bothers me really on this is when we have comic book covers that are kind of cutting and pasting from a panel in the comic. I've talked about this, I think, with Nick on the Nerd Legion podcast before. One of my favorite types of comic book covers are the covers that actually kind of go with what the story is about inside. In particular, when they do comic book word balloons on the covers, I love the word balloon covers. And a lot of times when those are really well done, they're kind of a, they're not exactly a cut and paste of interior art, but they are like that same panel, but from a different perspective, maybe, or like told from a couple seconds later on in what you see in the panel. So it's a similar look and feel, but it's not the exact same thing. I love those kind of panels because it tells me a lot about the story that's inside. And you know, most comics right now, I don't think they do that kind of thing anymore. And I wish more did because they're fantastic. And like I said, I love the word balloons on the covers because I love seeing what it is that I'm reading. I do love the more artistic covers, though. Those are fine. Some are really beautiful. And, you know, I have purchased comics simply based on the cover. I don't know if that kind of answers your question, Monica. That kind of went on a tangent there. Yeah, I think it's okay. I really do. Like I said, as long as it makes sense to what's being told in that sequence of panels, I don't really see a problem with it. I know some people may have different opinions on that, and that's fine. But for me, I don't really think it's a big a deal. Mike M. from Mike M's Weekly Reads and the Geek Brunch podcast, he wants to know, why buy a Marvel digital comic at $3.99 when you can get a print copy and a digital comic for $3.99 or less if you get a discount? And that is a great question, Mike. It's something that I used to wrestle with, and I don't wrestle with anymore. The short answer to your question is that the majority of my books I'm getting digitally. There's a couple reasons for that. One is I like to try a lot of new things. And so if I decide I don't like a book, I'm one of those people where I kind of don't want to keep it. And so by having it digitally, it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's on my Comixology account. And, you know, if I want to go back to it at some point, I can. If I don't, I don't have to. I understand your point of getting the additional value for $3.99, where you get a print copy and a digital code for the same price. I'm okay with spending that same price for simply a digital copy. My mentality on comics is very different, in particular from Mike's. Mike is, of course, I don't want to say a collector, maybe more an archivist would be a better term for Mike's reasoning for reading comics. He does, of course, buy a lot of comics, tons of comics. In fact, he and I have had private discussions about this. He buys a lot of comics, and I understand why he would want to buy the print copy and get the digital code, because he can have the comic, and then if he doesn't have time to read it, he can just load the code on his app and he can take it on the go with him. And I think that makes perfect sense. For me, I don't necessarily care to collect a lot of the Marvel titles. My main focus on collecting is really with Batman the Detective. It has been for decades. And so those two books I will always get in print copies. And oftentimes I'll double dip on digital copies as well. But I'm okay with not having print for a lot of the stuff that I read. In fact, most of the independents that I read digitally, save for a few. For example, like Scout Comics, I can't get digitally, so I have to buy those in print. I'm totally okay with that. Some of the books where I want to support the creative team, I will get in print, because I think it's important to have those additional sales. Print is still, of course, a larger chunk of the market than digital is. And so by supporting creators on print, it gives them more exposure, right? So my guest this week is Bridget Connell. She does Brother Nash that just came out over at Titan Comics this past week. And, you know, I did buy a copy digitally so I can read it on my tablet when I went to work, but I bought a print copy. And when I see her at Heroes Con this weekend, I'm going to buy another print copy from her because I believe in supporting indie creators. And I think it's important. In terms of Marvel explicitly, I mean, they're not hurting for my dollar. You know what I mean? My thing with Marvel is I want to read the books, but I'm not collecting them, so I don't need to have them in print. And, you know, my main thing is saving on space. I know Mike has issues with space. His wife yells at him when he, you know, has hundreds of comics on the dining room table or in the bathroom, wherever he stores his comics. And I don't necessarily have that problem because I do a large chunk digitally. I don't have an issue with space. I mean, I already have tons of long boxes from back issues of other stuff that I have, right? So I've got like Ultraverse collection, a full Valiant collection. I'm trying to think what other stuff I have. I have a big chunk of Milestone. I need to finish that collection. Of course, Batman and Detective and a few other titles. But for the most part, I'm okay reading digitally. You know, I can sit on my couch, pop open the tablet, don't need to worry about it. Once I'm done with it, I delete it from there. It's still on my Comixology account. I don't think Comixology will ever go anywhere. Amazon has deep pockets, and it's pretty obvious from the Comixology Unlimited stuff and the Comixology Original stuff that they're very much invested in continuing Comixology as a method of distribution. So I don't feel like they're going to go away. And if they do, then okay, I might be out of those digital copies, but you know, I'm sure I can get them somewhere else. I hope that answers your question, Mike. It might be a little long-winded, but you know, there's also comics or Marvel Unlimited, and you know, for a lot of the books, the older books, I don't feel the need to pick them up. I thought about doing like an Uncanny X-Men collection at one point, and I decided against that. I am getting a lot of like early Avenger stuff now, and I'm really digging that. But that's more like specific issues. I don't particularly want to have an entire run. And of course, like all that old stuff, I can always pick it up on Marvel Unlimited. So really good question. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people listening that have various opinions on this thing. Let me know, of course, on Twitter at Geekvine. And you can tag Mike on there. He's at Mike Myers Brunch. Mike C wants to know, how do you find time to read your books? I'm way behind on reading between work, kids, TV shows, movies, and video games. With some sleep sprinkled in amongst everything, my books to read take up more than a few long boxes. Man, yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one, Mike. We actually just had a discussion about this on the Nerdy Legion podcast. So you can go to nerdylegion.com/episodes/NL-152 and check out episode 152 of the Nerdy Legion podcast. If you're on like iTunes or Google Play or whatever, it's called We Might Have Given Mike the Scurvy. And that's a couple of inside jokes into one. But Nick and I went into that because Nick had the same question. You know, now that I'm doing this podcast, I'm reading more than I was reading before I started. Definitely more than I was reading even before I did my big culling of titles. So I guess sometimes last year that was. And I'm finding time to read about 90 to 95% of everything that I buy right now. I think for the most part, I'm 100% caught up within 2 or 3 weeks. And the reason for that is I'm trying to prioritize things, right? So obviously my priority is reading the books because I want to talk about these books on this podcast. So Top of the Pile always comes out on Monday. Okay, that's always the episode where I talk about the previous week's books. And I want to have varied enough content where I can pick and choose the books that I want to talk about. And, you know, if I only read 3 or 4 titles, I mean, do I want to just talk about those 3 or 4? What if the 15 or 20 others that I read were better? Part of my message on this podcast is I want to give people choices on what to read. You don't need to read the same stuff all the time. It's important to branch out. And that's part of the reason I don't always just talk about Marvel or DC. Obviously, DC is a huge passion for me. And I could easily just talk about 10 or 15 DC books every week. But you know what? If you want that, go listen to the Absolute DC podcast. Aaron and Ronnie do a great job over there. You know, they can tell you about those books. You can listen to Mike's podcast, you know, Mike Games Weekly Reads or Geek Brunch or whatever else. He'll give you some recommendations on DC stuff. I want to branch out to more than just that, of course. And I want to have as many varied options as I can. So in terms of finding the time, I have this really weird thing, and I go into in-depth on this on that episode of the Nerdy Legion, so check that out by all means. I have this weird thing with time. To me, time is money. And I came upon this idea, oh God, I don't know, 10 years ago, I want to say, when I read Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Workweek. Now, it doesn't mean you work 4 hours, by the way. If you want to read that book, go do that. You can go to nerdylegion.com/audible. You can get that book for free on Audible and support this podcast. But one of the ideas that I thought was really interesting there is the amount of effort to do things as compared to the amount of time it takes. And of course, for me, comics are very quick reads. I can read most comics in, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, sometimes even less, depending on the book. And, you know, even when I read, when I have a 20, 25, 30 book week, I still find time to read the majority of those, and most of the time in one sitting. So here's what I found was interesting, and I didn't think this would be the case, so I've experimented with some of this. Different people have different ways of reading books, right? So, for example, Mike always makes fun of Rob Krieger from Geek Brunch Retrocast, because Rob likes to read his books alphabetically. So he starts with A's and ends with Z's, okay? That's the way he does it. because that way, I guess he doesn't have to worry about, well, what do I want to read next? He puts them in order, reads them that way. I think that's a great way to do it. Mike is a mood reader. So if he wants to read Avengers, he read Avengers. If he wants to read Youngblood, he read Youngblood. If he wants to read Ninja K, he reads Ninja K and goes up from there. And there might be some tangents there. So I think maybe in that respect, being a mood reader, sometimes you can't get through your whole list, right? And Mike's talked about this on his podcast. When he does Mike Games Weekly Reads, the books that he's talking about right now came out, I think the last episode was August 2017. And I'm sure he's current on some books, of course. But for the majority of his books, in particular the amount of comics that he buys, it's impossible, I would say, to read all those in 1 week. I have the pleasure of not having really that problem because by, you know, having 20, let's just say 20 books a week, I can find the time to do that. So if I do 20 books a week, let's say it takes me, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes to read a book. I mean, I can usually read everything that I've read, that I picked up that one particular week within like 3 hours. Okay. Give or take. Sometimes it might be less. Sometimes it might be more depending on the books, but we'll just say 3 hours. What I found was interesting was that when I was reading books on a daily basis, I was not getting through my entire reading list. So that's the one thing. I went over this with Nick quite a bit in depth in that episode, so please check that out. But what I found was I would read a book, and then I just wanted to think about that book and soak it in. Because my reading habit is a little weird, right? Like, I like to think about pretty much everything that I read. I don't want to just read it and go to the next thing. By doing that, I kind of spent a little more time than maybe I wanted to on a book. And it kind of made it almost seem like a chore. We're like, oh my God, like today I have to read 3 books. Tomorrow I have to read 4 books. Oh my God, like there's a new comic book day coming out and here's another 20 books. And the anxiety itself made me not want to read. And so I kept on getting backed up and backed up. And originally I thought, well, maybe it's just the sheer amount of comics that I'm getting. But as it turns out, that was not the case. So what I've done now is I carve out a couple hours every week just to read comics, just to read comics. And for you regular listeners of the show, know that I don't take notes on any of the books that I read. I'm fortunate enough to have a pretty good memory, I guess. So that does help. Generally, when I talk about books on like Top of the Pile or Comic Predictor or anything like that, all I have is a list of creators, the title of the book, the publisher, and that's it. Sometimes maybe I'll put in a note on what the book was about. But for the most part, I'll record the Top of the Pile episode pretty much soon after I read the book. I might give myself maybe a couple hours just to let that stuff brew in my head. But for the most part, I'm pretty much well aware of what it is that I want to talk about on Top of the Pile previous to that. And all I have is creative teams. By carving out a couple of hours, what I find is that during the week, I know that I can do whatever I want with my time. Right. So if for me, time is money, even if I'm not making money doing whatever I'm doing. Right. So I'm not making money reading comics, but I'm using time as kind of a currency. And so if I want to watch TV one day, I'll watch TV one day. All I know is that, you know, Saturday afternoon, I'm going to be carving out 2 or 3 hours to read comic books. And it's almost like giving myself a present. Right. So when I was doing heavy DCBS ordering, the great thing about DCBS is it's really like a present. Right. If you're doing every 2 week or monthly shipping like I was doing, you know that at the end of the month, you're going to have this giant box filled with comics. And it's like Christmas. Right. You go and you get there and you pick up and you open. You're like, oh, my God, this is fantastic. Right. It gives me something to look forward to. And that's how I approach my comic book reading time. I don't want to sit and be like, OK, I feel like reading a comic right now. I'm going to go read this one. And tomorrow I'll go read that one. I know that Saturday or Sunday sometimes I'm going to have this little stretch of time where all I'm going to do is read comics. And my family knows it's Martin's comic reading time. Don't disturb him, okay? He's going to be out on the porch or out in the studio. He's going to be reading comics. It's peace and quiet time. And it's something really special to me. It's something that I really enjoy, right? Making time for things really does make it special. And I think that's something that we're losing a little bit. I don't want to get into this discussion, but it's something that we're losing a little bit in culture where, you know, everything's available to you at any time, all the time that you want it, right? You can load books on your tablet. You can load movies on your tablet or your computer or whatever. You can be on the plane and there's Wi-Fi and you can watch movies. And so we don't really have to think about that stuff. But when you really start to think about it, it does make it special because you're not constantly bombarded by it. So this approach may not work for you, Mike. This is Mike Conrad, I believe. Mike C. This approach may not work for you. You know, if you're like Mike M., you're a mood reader, and maybe you just feel like reading comics at any point of the day, and that's fine. But I think it's important for me in the way that I approach my life, in particular with my crazy work schedule, which fortunately has eased out quite a bit. But, you know, I work a lot of hours, right? I work 50, 60, 70 hours a week sometimes. And I have to find what's important to me, and what's important to me is comics. So if I don't have time to watch every single TV show that's out, I'm totally okay with that. If I don't have time to watch every movie that everybody wants to watch, I'm okay with that. If I don't have time to go see Infinity War on opening weekend, that's fine. But I want to read my comics because comics are my passion. It's what I really enjoy doing. It's like a little moment of Zen, right? It's like a little meditation time for me. You know, some people do actual meditation. Some people go to yoga or go to the gym or do whatever. Some people like to walk in the park. That's my comic time for me. Okay, just like cooking. Cooking is my Zen time also. I had my family over this weekend, and my dad kept wanting to help me in the kitchen make dinner and lunch or whatever. And I'm like, no, like, just go over there and do whatever you want to do, right? Like, this is my Zen time, right? It's a time where I can be alone, thinking about things, doing something creative, because I think cooking is extremely creative. And I approach comics the same way, right? This is the time where I want to escape into all these different worlds. And it's important for me to have that just me time, okay? Me time is really important, in particular with the hustle and bustle, you know? I don't constantly check Twitter and all the socials or whatever. I'm not even on Facebook anymore because that stuff is not as important to me. What's important to me is, of course, spending some time with my family and spending some time reading comics. And I don't know if that's going to answer your question. I know I go into in-depth quite a bit more in that episode. Again, it's Nerd Legion episode 152. We might have given Mike the scurvy. Check that out. I know we talked about it for like at least an hour on that. So I definitely give it more time. And I want to direct people over there because Nick and I had a great discussion. And I don't want to completely bring the discussion into this podcast because it's kind of already been discussed. And I know, Mike, you talked a little bit about not finding podcast time, too. Again, that's the same kind of thing, right? Sometimes we don't have time for that kind of stuff. A lot of people only have time to listen to podcasts on the way to work or on the way home from work or at lunchtime or when they walk the dog. And that's fine. I'm fortunate enough where I can multitask quite a bit. And so I listen to podcasts the majority of the day at work. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Not all of them comic book podcasts either because I have a lot of different interests. So just think about what's important to you and make time for those things according to the importance for you. And think about what I said about, you know, the time is money thing, right? Because, you know, you might spend $3.99 on a comic and only get 5 minutes worth of enjoyment. But for me, it's not just the 5 minutes of enjoyment while I'm reading the book. It's a lasting thing through the whole week, right? It resets my inner self in some way. This is getting like super weird, I know. I feel like Grant Morrison right now. But it does recenter me quite a bit when I have my comic reading time. And I often think about the books, you know, days after I read them. But think about how you want to read comics, what kinds of media is important to you, and how much your time is worth to you. You know, for me, my time is not cheap because I know what I make at work and I try to base my other activities based on that. And some of you might feel like that's really weird, but try it out. It might work out for you. I hope that answers all the questions. I want to thank you all again for submitting those. I would love to do listener questions maybe like once a week or every 2 weeks. So keep sending those to me. At GeekVine on Twitter is, of course, the best place. NerdyLegion@gmail.com is going to be the email address. I'll be back tomorrow with a fantastic guest, Bridget Connell, writer and artist for Brother Nash from Titan Comics. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. Can't wait to hang out with her this weekend at Heroes Con, which of course means I will be at Heroes Con. So if you're there, reach out to me. Again, Twitter's the best place. If you have my phone number, feel free to text me. I've been thinking about doing a phone number for the show so people can leave voicemails and I can play those on the podcast. I think that could be an interesting thing. And maybe I can use that to connect with you all when I go to conventions. But I'll be at Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina on Saturday. I'll be with my kids, so there won't be any, like, a whole lot of hangout time. But I'll definitely love to talk to you, whoever's there, and hang out with you a little bit. Thank you all again for listening, and I'll catch you tomorrow.